nobody seemed to respond to him any longer. He flailed, but it was as though all of his new muscle had turned to water. Uftak kept punching. He kept punching until Death Row had gone still and there was nothing left of his face except a green and red ruin, because Uftak had no intentions of letting the git get back up again behind him. Death Row had been a decent knob, but he'd got himself snatched by the spikies and turned into their weapon, and that was no way for an orc to live. Uftak knew that he'd prefer death to that, so it stood to reason that Death Row would have as well, had there been enough of him left to verbalise it. He wasn't going to be verbalising anything anymore. Uftak drew back his fist and landed one more punch, just to show the spikies that he wasn't bothered about beating one of his own knobs to death. When his fist made contact with what remained of Death Row's face, the ground shook. It shook hard enough, in fact, to send Uftak sprawling sideways off Death Row's corpse. As the green killing rage began to subside and the roaring in his ears quietened, Uftak realised that the noise of the arena around him had changed, and not just because of whatever the beaky had been up to in the stands behind him. An explosion was an explosion, pretty much, but that noise above him was the full-throated thunder of proper engines, not whiny, spiky lifter jets. And the sound rolling out across the arena was not the sizzling of Humi light zappers or Fishboy mega blasters. "I know those guns," Uftak said. Chapter 23. The games in the arena of Deathly Sorrow were widely regarded as the best in all of Port Tavar, and indeed farther afield still. The cult of the Silver Shards might best them in terms of the sheer barbarity of the environments in which their gladiators competed, but the Deathly Sorrow's entertainments were superior in size, spectacle and variety. Dimera had attended before, but never at the request of the cult's Grand Succubus, and never in such luxury. From her seat in the Grand Box, she could follow any flens as it flew around the arena, tracking the individual contests and combats, and have its signal sent to her personal screen. She could even, if she so wished, view particularly entertaining deaths or displays of martial prowess again, or slowed down, or from different angles. Meanwhile, slaves were on hand to offer her the very finest victuals and drinks taken directly from Zuzuli's personal kitchens. It was a vulgar display of wealth and power, but impressive nonetheless. The mistress of the cult of the Deathly Sorrow wanted there to be no doubt about how little she needed her current partners. Once the orcish threat was dealt with, Dimera would not be surprised if Zuzuli Mindrex intended to become the dominant force in Port Tavar herself. It would be unusual, which cults usually steered clear of such overt political manoeuvring, instead preferring to ally themselves with cabals for mutual benefit and cut ties if it seemed they'd miscalculated, but not exactly unheard of. Beside Dimera, Dalgar chuckled with delight as he watched a flock of razor wings bring down a bulbous, warty biped of a species Dimera did not recognise and tear it apart. Her brother was lapping up the spectacles on offer and savouring the wisps of psychic torment they produced, and appeared to have quite forgotten his earlier spat with Maculitix, who was himself observing the rampages of an enslaved grotesque, captured from the Coven of the Twisted Blade, if Dimera was any judge, with macabre relish. Zuzuli was in fine humour, announcing the various contests and combatants to the crowd, and projecting herself into a towering image in the arena's centre that went, in Dimera's opinion, some way towards representing the sheer size of the succubus's ego. Dimera looked to her other side, towards Sistriel Verne. She was simply checking what her fellow Archon was doing, which was always wise when in close proximity to someone of whose motivations one could not be entirely sure. She was startled to meet Sistriel's eyes, since the other Archon was already looking at her. "Ah," Dimera said, and swallowed with a throat that had inexplicably become treacherously dry. For his part, Sistriel's eyes twitched, a virtually invisible movement, but as obvious as a guilty flinch for someone as experienced at reading the micro-languages of Drukhari interactions as Dimera. Systriel had clearly not intended to be seen looking at her. Had the Archon of the Cabal of the Falling Knight been harbouring treacherous intent?
"Are you enjoying the games?" Systriel said lightly,
but his tone was too deliberately casual. Now he looked away, as though returning his own attention to the spectacle, but his screen was flicking through the feeds, one flens after another. It was a cover, and a poor one.
"Indeed," Dimera said.
Their alliance was still important, and she was unwilling to risk it by confronting her rival over such a small thing.
"This is as grand a show as any I can remember seeing."
Her words sounded stilted and lifeless in her mouth, but what was said was said.
"Ah, but my friends, the best is yet to come,"
Zuzuli said from in front, leaning backwards until her blade-laced hair drooped down between them.
"I have high hopes for the next edition."
She straightened in her seat and manipulated a small control. Nothing happened for a few seconds, but then the feed switched to focus on a specific grille gate set into the arena wall.
"What are we supposed to be looking at?"
Systriel said, the tone of his voice very different to the artificial lightness it had contained a few moments before. Now it was strong and sure, and the question clearly contained the implication that he felt the lack of an obvious subject to observe was not down to his own lack of perceptiveness, but rather a failing on the part of their host.
"One moment," Zuzuli said,
although she was clearly annoyed at the apparent delay. However, a few moments later, the grill gate clattered open and deposited a massive figure at high speed into the dirt of the arena floor. Dimera had been half expecting this, but even so, she found herself leaning forward and her hands clenching the armrests of her luxurious seat.
"Zuzuli, you released the Arrakia?"
"Of course," Zuzuli said, her expression half contemptuous, half puzzled.
"Why would I not? Did I not tell you of my conversation with the creature?"
Dimera bit out.
"It admitted that its kind thrives on combat. Which is just as well, since I intend to thrive on its combat,"
Zuzuli said with a malicious laugh.
"My price for joining your alliance was that we take the beast alive. Did you honestly think I would let it rot uselessly in my dungeons?"
She engaged her projection once again and stood up to let the arena drink in her grandeur. Her image towered above them all as she began to speak.
"Honored guests and sniveling wretches, the cult of the Deathly Sorrow is proud to introduce our latest showpiece, the massive and deadly leader of the Arrakia warband that has been making such trouble in Sabergate and Port Tavar."
A pair of flenses flickered down and focused on Uftak Blackhawk, who glowered up at them. Even at this distance removed from the creature, even knowing that it could not see her, Dimera felt the power and intensity of its stare.
"The first challenge for our newest guest is an old favourite, with many arena kills to his name,"
Zuzuli announced, sadistic glee dripping from her voice.
"What is more, I am informed that the specific caste of Monkey warriors to which this Marcus Deus belongs harbours a particular hatred of the Arrakia. Let's see how they fare against each other."
A cage rose up from the arena floor and disgorged a bulky, armoured shape familiar to anyone who had waged war against the Monkey for any length of time.
"A space marine,"
Maculatix said, steepling the fingers of his natural hands.
"However did you procure one alive?"
"I cannot go sharing the secrets of my beastmasters now, can I, Master Homunculus?"
Zuzuli chuckled.
"Come now, this should be a good show."
"The Space Marine does not stand a chance," Dimera said bluntly.
Zuzuli glared at her, and Dimera went back to watching her feed in silence. She was proven correct in short order. Uftak knocked the Monkey warrior over, fended off a furious rush that would have butchered many an opponent, then simply whirled the Space Marine around and hurled it into the crowd with a truly shocking display of strength. Dimera could not have even lifted the monkey giant encased in its armour, although, in fairness, nor would she have tried to. Uftak's method of disposing of its opponent was far cruder than she would have employed, but still brutally efficient.
Dimera's assessment was accurate,
Sistriel commented. He glanced slyly at Dimera before adding,
Perhaps it would have been beneficial to consult someone who had actually fought the creature before you assigned it a somewhat underwhelming opponent.
Zuzuli did not acknowledge that with a response. A Flens had followed Marcus Dias into the crowd and was detailing the slaughter that followed as the enraged killer took its frustrations out on the paupers who packed the seats closest to the action. There were no fancy Flens arrayed for them to sample the myriad delights as they wished. They simply took in what was in front of them and lived with the risk of occasional peril from unexpected escapees. The cult could have erected a barrier, of course, but where would the fun be in that?
Someone subdue the monkey before it reaches anyone important, Zuzuli commanded in clipped tones.
Then she turned to Maculatix.
Master Homunculus, shall we see how the Abrachia responds to a familiar face?
It is hardly my finest work, given the limited time and tools with which I had to work,
Maculatix said with false modesty.
However, I am intrigued to see how the contest goes.
Zuzuli nodded, as though there was any chance of the succubus being gainsaid in her own arena, and got to her feet once more. Her gigantic simulacrum filled the sky again, along with smaller images of Uftak, although even these were still large enough to be seen by all.
The beast wishes to play, it seems,
Zuzuli declared.
Very well, we shall see how it fares against its own kind.
She made a chopping gesture with her hand, and her image winked out again. However, as the succubus's voice finished thundering around the arena, Dimera cocked her head and listened intently. Sistriel leaned in close to her until their foreheads were nearly touching, and Dimera's hands clenched again. It was an entirely natural reaction to a potential enemy being so close, but she had no intention of flinching backwards.
Do you hear that too?
Sistriel asked in a low voice, and Dimera forced herself to concentrate on what she had been listening to in the first place, rather than her rival's face mere inches from her own.
Yes,
she said quietly, after another couple of seconds. Now she did sit back, unease stirring in her stomach. The sounds of combat in the arena were loud and pervasive, but there was a new noise that Dimera was certain she had not heard before. Or rather, she had heard it before, but not here. She had heard it elsewhere in Port Tavar and in Sabergate, because it was the distant sound of massed orc weapons fire.
I said we were not to be disturbed,
Zuzuli snapped, which took Dimera by surprise for a moment until she realized the succubus must be speaking to an underling who was addressing her by carrier wave. Dimera could see Zuzuli's eyes glistening as she watched the cage being brought in by four Reaver jet bikes and recognized the signs of hyperfocus. The ability to turn all of one's concentration onto a foe was a potent tool in the combat arsenal of a witch, but it had the disadvantage of blinkering them to more general threats. Many were the bands of witches who had plunged deep into the ranks of an enemy, but once caught up in their desire to spill blood, failed to notice that they were being encircled by the wings of the enemy's force. That, Dimera thought somewhat smugly, was why you needed an Archon. The Cabals indulged themselves in the hedonistic bloodshed of battle, but never to the exclusion of their own self-preservation. However, it seemed that Zuzuli was going to need some prompting.
The Abrachia are coming, Dimera said urgently. Listen, Zuzuli, can you not hear them?
The face that the succubus of the Deathly Sorrow turned towards Dimera was a furious one, but it seemed that she could no longer block out the truth. Nonetheless, she laughed.
So what if they are? This arena is a fortress as much as it is a stadium. Do you honestly think they can penetrate it?
Yes, Cistriel said before Dimera could reply.
You have only encountered the Arachia when you have been raiding Sozuli, when they are hard to hurt but slow to react. They have a fearsome blend of cunning and brutality when they are the ones attacking. We still do not even understand how they managed to turn a deactivated webway portal to their own will to get here in the first place.
Zuzuli's expression shifted into one almost of petulance, but she listened to the carrier waves for a moment, then hissed in frustration.
They are attacking the far end of the arena, trying to force entry. The wall is holding us so far, but they are bringing up those crude Titan equivalents.
She smiled, showing her teeth.
Of course, there is nothing to say that the brutes can even hit a target the size of a wall with their guns.
Dimera cast a glance at the Flens feed. Uftak had been grappling with Maculatix's creation, a massively enlarged orc with a third arm grafted on, but had now gained the upper hand and was methodically staving its former comrade's skull in with its fist. Uftak reached back for one final punch. When it landed, the ground shook.
I think they hit the wall,
Dimera said urgently.
A pall of smoke and dust was already rising from the far end of the arena, visible despite the miles between them and it.
Then they have come to their own deaths,
Zuzuli spat.
The succubus rose to her full height, and the circular roof of the arena began to disgorge vehicle after vehicle as her warriors left their seats and piled into them, ready to take the fight to the brutish invaders. Zuzuli gestured, and suddenly Dimera's ear was buzzing with carrier wave signals from her own underlings, desperately trying to get her attention.
You blocked our transmissions,
she demanded angrily.
Why? You would have insulted me by giving the glories of the greatest show you have ever seen less than your full attention,
Zuzuli scoffed.
Had we done so, we might all have learned of the arrival of the Arachia's army before they blew a hole in your wall,
Maculatix said, his voice dripping with scorn.
Your creation was a substandard disappointment,
Zuzuli said, as though the homunculus had not voiced anything of relevance.
I shall not be seeking out your services for the creation of arena combatants again. Now come, we have business to attend to.
Two craft descended into view. One was a raider, packed with Zuzuli's blood brides. The other was the Grand Succubus's personal venom, with a completely empty passenger bay.
And what business is that? Dalgar asked,
not without a little trepidation. For once, Dimera's thoughts aligned with those of her brother, since Zuzuli rapidly appeared to have moved beyond the strength of will and self-belief one would expect of a succubus in control of a powerful witch cult, and into the realms of delusion.
The Arachia chieftain, of course, Zuzuli said.
She vaulted aboard her craft and seized up the agonizer and glaive that awaited her.
Since my captive Monkey and Maculatix's creation could not end its existence, perhaps the combined forces of the brave leaders of Port Tavar will be enough. Unless you would prefer to stay here, she added, and let me claim its head all for myself.
Dimera glanced at the others, but found unanimity looking back at her. Despite the treacherousness of her brother, the tenuousness of her alliance with the Maculatix, and the ongoing confusion of Cistriel Verne's motivations, none of them wanted to let Zuzuli Mindrex take on Uftak Blackhawk alone. Should she do so and win, then she would surely eclipse them. None of them intended to let anyone else seize enough power to be the uncontested ruler of Port Tavar, and that meant working together, for now, to prevent any one of their number becoming preeminent.
Of course not, Grand Succubus,
Dimera said on behalf of them all as they boarded Zuzuli's craft.
Let us slay the beast together.
Chapter 24 Uftak grinned with delight as the thunder of orcish guns reverberated through the arena. The spikies he could see in the crowd, those that hadn't been killed by or run away from the Beaky, were clearly unsettled by what was going on, and Uftak was enjoying every moment of it. Sneering, superior gits that they were, acting as though being tall and spindly and living for a long time made them better than everyone else. It was about time someone drove into their home and taught them a thing or two. The Spikies weren't the only ones who'd realised what the enormous explosion and new timbre of gunfire meant. The remaining Humies and Fish Boys had stopped shooting at each other and were hunkered down, their guns turned towards the direction of the new sounds. Their huddled shapes had the air of captives who had been killing each other on the basis that their captors would kill them anyway if they didn't, but now realised their captors might not be in charge any longer and weren't entirely sure if this was an improvement from their perspective. Uftak was tempted to walk up to them and give them a kicking on general principle, but there seemed little point to it. It would be far more amusing to wait for them to decide to get some revenge on Spikies. Speaking of which, the sound of screaming jets announced the arrival of more Spiky vehicles, coming in fast and high at first, then killing their forward momentum and dropping directly down towards him. One was a flying truck packed with the really flippy Spikies that didn't wear many clothes, presumably in case they got in the way of the flipping. The other was one of the small zippy flyers, and Uftak's eyes narrowed as he saw who was riding in it. There were a couple he didn't know. A cadaverous, multi-armed Spiky that looked a bit like the one that had stabbed him with its fingers and which floated like De Boffin now did. And a pale-haired, pale-skinned one in dull green armour. But he recognised the other three. One had been projecting itself above the arena and seemed to be in charge of this place. The second was the one Uftak had been talking to from his cell, the Spiky boss that had carved up Uzgit and his lads. The third took a moment, but there was something very familiar about its armour and its stance. He'd never seen its face before, but the expression of fear-racked hatred was exactly what he would have expected, bearing in mind their previous meeting.
"I know you,"
he bellowed, pointing at the Spiky, who actually flinched a little.
"You chopped me hand off, and I dropped a truck on you."
The Spiky hid its face by donning a cruel-looking helmet, which added the question of how it had grown back the arm that Princess had bitten off to the first question of why it wasn't still a very flat smear somewhere, and it and its companions readied their weapons. There were a lot of whips, swords and general pointy implements in evidence, and here was Uftak without a weapon of any sort. It wasn't right. If the Spikies had to send a whole bunch of their bosses to kill him, then fair enough. He'd take that as good a way as any to get sent to meet Gawk and Mawk, but it seemed a bit anticlimactic to be fighting them with his bare hands. If only he had the snazhammer with him to give them a proper fight. But hang on a second. He must have dropped the snazhammer when the Skygits had drugged him. Surely one of the lads would have picked it up. It was a zogging fine weapon. The whole point of getting De Boffin to stick the teleport Homer on it was to make sure that no one pinched it once Uftak had thrown it at something, so no self-respecting orc would have just left it on the ground. And if the lads were here, then that presumably meant the hammer was too, which meant it should be back in range. This was no time for half measures. Uftak faced the Spikies and slammed the palm of his hand into his chest, button and all. Chapter 25. Dimera seized the Venom's rail, ready to vault out of it, just as the Orc chieftain beat its chest once in a typically bestial manner, and disappeared. There was a long moment of silence.
"What?"
Suzuli Mindrex said, her tone of voice one that threatened immediate and profligate violence if occurrences did not stop disappointing her.
"Just happened."
Chapter 26. Uftak quite enjoyed the sensation of teleporting. The world went really colourful and loud for a moment. Everything screamed at you, and sometimes tried to eat you, and then you arrived where you were going all pumped up and ready to fight whatever you found. However, he was normally expecting it, so this one took him off guard a bit. He staggered a step to his left and collided with something solid.
"What?"
he said, and realised that his right hand was holding something. He looked at it. It was the Snazhammer.
Boss! A voice shouted gleefully.
Uftak blinked away the last vestiges of disorientation and realised that instead of standing on the arena floor and waiting for the spiky bosses to come and try and kill him, he was in the back of a truck and Mogrot Redtooth was right in front of him. Behind Mogrot, Princess bounced up and down and squealed in excitement.
Sogging heck!
Uftak bellowed, causing the orcs around him to cower away for a moment.
This thing was supposed to come to me, not me go to it. I was about to have a really good scrap.
He looked around. The truck was at the head of a wide front of orc vehicles powering forward into the spiky arena, firing their weapons for all they were worth. Fighter bombers roared overhead, guns blazing as they engaged spiky flyboys and skygits. Behind him, the earth-shaking footfalls of stompers were only drowned out by the explosions kicked up as their massive munitions thundered away to detonate in the stands, blowing great chunks out of the enormous structure.
On the other hand, this is all right, I guess.
Uftak conceded with bad grace. He looked down.
Why is the floor sticky? Well, boss, you're standing where Scarbed was,
said Wazuk, another of Uftak's former mob who had since gone on to take charge of a mob of his own. These were the slugger boys currently crammed into the back of the truck, all pressed up against the sides since Uftak took up a great deal of space these days.
We gave him your hammer to hang on to in case we found you,
Wazuk continued,
but I guess you found us instead. He sort of exploded when you turned up.
Uftak grunted.
How'd you know where to look for me? It was the Grot,
Mogrot said excitedly.
You know, boss, you're Grot.
Uftak wrinkled his brow.
What? Nisquik?
He couldn't imagine Nisquik knowing where to look for his own hands.
Nah, you're other Grot, Mogrot said. Not the stupid one, the stabby one.
Uftak was going to say something scathing about Mogrot referring to any other multi-celled organism as stupid, but the git had at least managed to latch onto an appropriate frame of reference. If you had to assign roles to the two grots who followed Uftak around, then Nisquik was definitely the stupid one, and Snaggy was undeniably the stabby one. Uftak decided to have a quiet word with both De Boffin and Doc Drosfang once this mess was sorted out, to make sure that Snaggy never ended up in a killer can, no matter how eagerly he volunteered.
All right, Snaggy,
he said.
What happened? He was babbling something about the signal what links your hammer and your armour, Wazuk said. Nuzlug budged up something what pointed us in the right direction for a bit, but don't tell me,
Uftak said, putting his hand over his eyes.
It blew up.
Yeah,
Wazuk said.
But then we saw this place, with a giant spiky standing in the middle of it, so tall we could even see it over the walls. It kept appearing and disappearing, but we thought it looked like something worth fighting, so we all headed over to see what was what. Good lads,
Uftak said.
Good lads.
He hefted the Snazhammer. It was more or less the size of a regular chopper to a regular orc, at least in his hand as it was now, but it would still kill spikies just fine.
So is there a giant spike here?
Mogrot asked eagerly.
Nah,
Uftak said, and Mogrot's face fell.
But don't worry,
Uftak added, pointing.
There's still plenty of the gits to scrag.
They were coming in fast. A veritable horde of them, now the spikies had got themselves sorted and worked out that they were actually under attack. Skytruck after skytruck was dropping down, filled with warriors and spitting fire into the thundering orcish convoy. The lads were answering in kind, naturally, with truck-mounted big shooters coughing streams of rounds into the air, and the passengers firing off their own weaponry with great abandon, albeit not great accuracy. Still, The sheer volume of fire and the density of the attacking spikies meant that many of the incoming vehicles were clipped and began to spin, veer, or simply drop like stones, depending on how they'd been damaged. Uftak heard a new scream of engines behind him, and a mob of storm boys powered up into the air, aiming to take the fight to the enemy in their own element. However, they weren't the only ones with that idea.
"Spikey's coming in,"
Wazak yelled, and discharged the scorcher part of his combi shooter into the air. The Gits were swinging down on lines from one of their vehicles, closing in on Uftak's truck with an almost sickening agility, grace, and accuracy. Wazak's tongue of dirty yellow flame engulfed one spiky and sent it tumbling with an ear-rending screech, but its mates were unscathed, and they landed on the truck with knives drawn. Of course, there wasn't a great deal of truck to land on that wasn't already occupied by orcs, so combat was instantaneous. This wasn't the hack and slash of a ruck on solid ground, where orcs would pile forward trusting to momentum and brute force, while spikies danced out of the way and tried to stick them with knives while staying out of reach. This was close and desperate and bloody, with no room for finesse, feints, or mistakes. One spikey landed knees first on an orc and plunged twin daggers into his neck with a shrill yell. Another was broken clean in half as the momentum of its swing met an orc chopper coming the other way at waist height. Spiky pistols shot splinters of solid poison into orc eyes and roaring orc mouths, and sluggers blew holes in spiky chests large enough for the spikies in question to fit their own heads into, had they been particularly limber. One spiky actually backflipped off the line on which it had been swinging and lashed out with a whip that coiled around Uftak's hammer arm. Pain flared through the limb where the whip's serrated edges soared through his sleeve and touched his skin, but he ignored it and yanked his arm backwards. The spiky was too startled to let go of its weapon and found itself tugged straight into Uftak's fist with an impact similar to if it had landed in front of a truck going at full speed. Uftak stamped on it for good measure, grabbed another one and hurled it bodily off the truck. It landed on its feet but immediately got run over by a battle wagon, then finally got enough room to clobber a third with the snazhammer right on top of its head. The sheer force of the blow immediately reduced the spiky in question to a height more akin to that of a grot, somewhat bursting it in the process.
"Heads up!" Uftak roared.
The convoy had been approaching a large area of the arena floor that was taken up by tall woody plants, presumably so the spikies could watch their captives engage in jungle warfare or have them hunted by forest predators. Huge shapes were now emerging from between the trunks and thundering towards the Tekwar's trucks with obvious malice. Uftak saw the enormous forms of the strange, swollen spikies he'd fought back before he got drugged and grabbed, but there were other creatures there as well that he'd never seen before. It looked like the spikies of the arena had emptied their dungeons of every big and nasty monster they could find and pointed them all at the orcs. The collision of the two battle lines was cataclysmic. A tremendous smacking of metal into flesh where, for a wonder, flesh did not always come off worst. For every beast that got mashed by a rambar and ground under huge knobbly wheels or rusted metal tracks, another one used a combination of massive size and unnatural nimbleness to hit a truck at an angle and topple it. The orc advance began to slow, as overturned vehicles blocked the progress of those behind, and unharmed vehicles braked to let their passengers out so they could get stuck into the fighting. Mogrot, Wazak, and those of Wazak's lads that hadn't already been knifed to death piled gleefully over the sides and started laying about themselves as their truck slewed to a halt, but Uftak paused for a moment to look up at the spikies still circling above them. The scragging spikies were down here, slitting throats and getting bludgeoned into oblivion in turn, but the shooting spikies were still up there, taking pot shots from over the side of their flying trucks and picking off the boys one by one. What was more, most of the lads weren't paying attention to them any longer. They had plenty to keep them occupied at ground level, what with the scragging spikies and the dungeon creatures. Who cared about the gits above you when you had a roaring monstrosity in front of you with tentacles for a tongue or knives for hands, right there in reach of your chopper? Uftak, that was who. Thinking could be a pain in the head sometimes, but, well, damn it, Uftak wasn't going to let the Spikies get one over on him just because they could think too. They'd found a way to slow his lads down and hold them still to shoot them more easily. Well, then he needed to solve this problem. He hurled the snazhammer. It flew upwards, tumbling end over end, until the axe blade side of it thunked into the hull of a Spiky vehicle. One of the crew looked over the side, a tiny helmet peering down at the vessel's new adornment.
"Princess," Uftak said, whistling. "Who's a good squeaky?"
Princess apparently came to the conclusion that it was indeed the good squig in question and leaped joyously at Uftak. He caught it under his left arm, raised his right hand and triggered the button. At the absolute worst, nothing would happen and he'd have to find a new weapon. More likely, the snazhammer would come back to him and he'd be back where he'd been a few seconds ago. There was, he realised in the middle of closing his fist, the faintest possibility that the snazhammer would come back to him with the spiky flyer still attached, which would be interesting. Instead, the world screamed at him for a second, and then he was hanging off the snazhammer's handle a stomper's height or more above the ground. The spiky vessel tilted at the sudden extra weight, and Uftak propelled his left arm upwards. Princess squealed with delight as it flew up, the sound only becoming muffled when its fanged maw engulfed the helmet of the Spiky that had looked down. The Spiky staggered backwards with a scream that ended abruptly as Princess bit his head off, and Uftak clamped his fingers over the flyer's edge. Back in the days when he'd been a regular orc boy, he'd never have reached it. He was far bigger now, however, and his arms were far longer. He heaved himself up and onto the vehicle, his swaying weight causing it to yaw unevenly, but the Spikies on board were too busy concentrating on Princess to notice him at first. The squig was bounding around with great enthusiasm, looking to bite as many different things as possible, and the Spikies were reacting as ranged troops often did when faced with a fast-moving immediate threat in their midst. They were attempting to shoot it, usually missing and sometimes hitting each other. Uftak wrenched the snazhammer out of the flyer's hole behind him and set to work. It didn't take long. The Spikies might have been nimble, but their silly, skinny vehicle gave them very little room in which to take best advantage of that agility. One sweep of the snazhammer carried three over the edge in various states of injury, and then it was already all over bar the shouting. One of the gits managed to land a sputter of poisoned splinters into Uftak's chest, but the brief wave of dizziness that followed was not sufficient to prevent him from swatting it over the side with his free hand just before he clobbered another with the snazhammer, while Princess tore the leg off a third. That one overbalanced over the side. The one doing the steering, which had seen Uftak marching down the flyer towards it, clearly decided that its mate had the right idea and leaped off of its own accord before he could reach it, leaving the vessel empty apart from Uftak, Princess and some corpses.
"Right," Uftak said with some satisfaction. "That's that."
Or it would have been, were it not for the fact that there were many other spiky flyers around them, none of which he was able to get to, and many of which had noticed the scrap that had been taking place. Uftak became aware of a growing encirclement of other flying trucks surrounding the one on which he stood, becalmed and still, and a very easy target.
"Oh, Zog,"
Uftak said, just as the Spikies opened fire. There was a big difference between shaking off the effects of a few splinters, probably helped by his recently increased mass, meaning the poison was stretched further, like how three orcs would get through a box of shooter shells faster than one, and ignoring the concentrated fire of whole truckloads of Spikies. Uftak hunkered down as well as he could behind the steering controls, but the sheer size that had so benefited him a few moments ago meant that there was nowhere he could fully take cover, even had the gits not been all around him in any case. He could throw himself over the side to escape the barrage and hope he landed on something soft, but that seemed an outside chance. The arena was not exactly a welcoming environment, and orcs didn't call Spikies Spikies for no reason. Even if he landed on the gits he'd just pitched overboard, he'd still be pulling helmets and pauldrons out of his flesh for a week. Uftak put his fist through the control panel on the basis that it was unlikely to make things actively worse. The flyer lurched forward with a strained whine, and a lot of the spiky shooting was abruptly passing through the empty air behind it. The vehicle directly in front of them tried to twitch to one side, but the sheer speed of the spiky's own vessels worked against it, and Uftak's craft rammed into it before it could complete its evasive action. The wickedly sharp ramming spike at the front of Uftak's flyer scraped down the side of its sister, and then the inevitable happened. Spiky protuberances entangled and interlocked, and the two craft began to spin around each other, whirling through the air. The spikies aboard the other craft had to hang on desperately as their vessel's momentum threatened to spin them clean off it. Princess clamped its teeth around the central mast, the centrifugal force lifting its entire body off the deck. Uftak took a few seconds to pick some of the larger, more obvious splinters out of himself and waited for at least one sort of spinning in his head to stop, then mashed the control panel again. This time, the engines cut out completely and the flyer began to drop. The other one was still locked up with it, but its straining engines could not keep the weight of both vehicles aloft, and they began to spiral down towards the ground. Uftak peered over the side, waited until he saw a battle wagon underneath him, and jumped. It wasn't a soft landing, but it was at least a close one. He didn't fall far, and the wagon's roof held rather than collapsing beneath him, although it did bend a little under his suddenly arriving weight. The battle wagon itself wasn't moving, given it was now mired in a mess of the other vehicles that had come to a halt when orcs and spiky monsters started laying into each other.
"Boss!"
someone behind him shouted, and Uftak turned around to see the gunner of the battle wagon's kill cannon staring at him from behind the sights of his gun.
"You see those things?"
Uftak bellowed, pointing at the still-descending spiky vehicles directly in front of the battle wagon.
"Cramp 'em!"
He held up one hand.
"Actually, wait a sec."
A round, red, squealing shape bounded into view and landed next to him. Princess squealed happily, an arm sticking out of its mouth.
"Now, cramp 'em,"
Uftak said. He leaped off the side of the vehicle with Princess beside him and the kill cannon opened fire. Uftak would never have claimed that orcs were the best shots in the galaxy. Even his own Bab Moons clan were no more accurate than the rest of their kin. They'd just made up for it by owning guns that fired more shots in the first place, since if you had enough Daka, then every enemy's survival rate dropped to zero. The battle wagon's gunner was a Bab Moon, and probably average in every respect. But even he was going to struggle to miss a target of that size directly in front of him. The kill cannon went off with a sound like a god clearing its throat, and the spiky flyers came apart like a grot in a pen of gnasher squigs. Uftak ducked as a piece of one sailed past his head, followed by a piece of spiky a moment later, and banged on the side of the battle wagon.
"Good shooting," he yelled. "Now, get blasting the one still up there."
"I'd love to, boss,"
the gunner called back.
"But we ain't got no more Daka."
Uftak wrinkled his nose at him.
"You what?"
"Yeah, beats me,"
the orc said, opening the door and clambering out with a slugger and a chopper in his hands.
"Thought we had loads, but it's all gone. The engines run dry as well, so we can't even run the ones on the ground over. Just gonna have to give the gits a kick in the old-fashioned way."
He leaped off the wagon and went piling into the ruck, leaving a nonplussed Uftak behind him. What was more, the other nearby guns, which had been taking shots at the circling spiky flyers, were falling silent as well. What was going on? How were they running out of ammo and fuel? This was a war, for Mork's sake. Well, there was nothing for it. Uftak couldn't come up with fuel and ammo on the spot, and even if he could, that was grot work. He'd just have to do what he did best.
"Ready for another scrap?"
he asked Princess, who bounced up and down and squealed in what Uftak was prepared to take as an affirmative.
"All right, let's go."
He'd got 3 strides deep into the melee and had just lopped the head off something with too many eyes and too little skin when the sky began spitting death. Orcs and spikies fell around him, cut down by indiscriminate fire. Uftak just had time to wonder what was going on when a zippy flyer shot in and disgorged 5 shapes that tumbled elegantly to the ground.
"Oh, it's you,"
Uftak said in Humi, as the 5 spiky bosses drew their weapons. "Are you going to run away again?" called the one who had spoken to him in his cell, whipping her blade back and forth.
"Don't need to," Uftak said with a shrug. "Got me hammer now."
He picked up 1/2 orc and hurled it as far as he could in the other direction.
"Princess, fetch."
The squig bounded joyously away and Uftak set his feet. He wasn't having anyone say he needed a squig to help him fight his battles.
"Right then, spikies, let's make this clear."
He took a firm grip on the snazhammer and grinned at them.
"Come and have a go, you sogging kids."
Chapter 27.
"Now, I'll grant you, this ain't the best situation," Snaggy said, ducking as 1/2 spiky flew past his head.
"Ain't the best," Swipe wailed. "The orcs kicked into Spiky's front door and started trashing their house. There's spikies all around us and they've all got knives."
"Also, the orcs ain't got much fuel or ammo left,"
Nib yelled. He pulled the trigger of his blaster, then ducked down in panic behind the truck where they were sheltering.
"Oh, Mork, help me, I hit something." "That's a good thing, ain't it?"
Longtooth said, puzzled.
"Not when it means it's noticed me."
The spiky came over the truck like a migraine through a fungus beer hangover, sharp-edged and merciless. Longtooth was impaled by its serrated blade before he'd even worked out what was going on, and the spiky laughed behind its helm. But it had misjudged the fury of Snaggy Littletooth, grot boss and prophet of Gawk and Mork. More specifically, it had misjudged the mentality of grots in general. If a grot was faced with danger, its usual instinct was to run. However, if a grot was surrounded by danger with nowhere safe to run to, the deeply buried fight instinct would come to the fore. Snaggy, thanks to his enormous intelligence, had already worked out that there were 2 ways to get grots to fight. Convince them that they were going to easily win, or convince them that everywhere else was just as bad and so they might as well try to kill the thing in front of them.
"Scrag it, lads!"
Snaggy yelled, and stuck his stabber into the joint of the armour behind the spiky's knee. The spiky wobbled, and 12 grots converged upon it with the killer instinct of small and vicious beings that had suddenly seen a chance to knife something without getting gutted in return. Nib grabbed onto the spiky's chopper arm to prevent it from pulling the blade back out of Longtooth's chest. Longtooth himself was already drooping, so didn't get much of a say in the matter, and the rest piled onto the lanky git, bowling it backwards to the ground and setting to work. Spiky armour was tough, but it still had gaps, and grots were experts at finding their way around obstacles. Within seconds, the spiky's throat had been opened, and also someone had hacked off one of its hands, for reasons of which Snaggy was not quite certain, but wasn't going to question right now when there were more important things to worry about.
"Nib,"
he snapped.
"What was that about the orcs being low on fuel and ammo?"
"Bill, yeah,"
Nib said, pulling the spiky's blade free and waving it experimentally while Longtooth fell over with a groan that everyone ignored.
"The lads got to work, just like you said to. Hide stuff, nick stuff and break stuff, right?" "That was when we thought Uftak was gone," Snaggy said, exasperated. "We was trying to seed maximum confusion while the orcs were fighting each other to take over. There's no point doing it when they were just coming to find him again."
"Right, boss, I can see that,"
Nip said, nodding.
"Thing is, after you told us to do it, you never told us to not do it."
"So, you're telling me," Snaggy said slowly, in a voice that he hoped conveyed his displeasure, "that the war just drove into the middle of a nest of spikies, but you ditched all the ammo?
But you said not to think that the orcs would protect us from the Sparkies,
Swipe said.
You said...
I know what I said,
Snaggy thundered, rounding on him.
But Mork alive, lads, context, context. I can't do all the thinking for you.
Why not?
Someone else piped up.
Ain't that the point of bosses?
Yeah,
another grot added.
No one said I had to think for myself in this revolution. That's a swindle.
Snaggy growled in frustration. Was it too much to ask to have underlings who knew exactly what they should be doing and had the intelligence to predict your wishes at any given moment, but still looked up to you and treated you as a divine oracle? He didn't think so.
All right, lads,
he said with resignation.
I'd hope to avoid this, but I ain't sure we got much of an option no more. I think we're going to have to fight.
We just did fight,
Nib said, pointing at the dead Spiky.
Nah, I mean proper fighting,
Snaggy said.
Not scragging one git what walked into the middle of us. The Spikies will kill us if they get the chance, probably proper slow and uncomfortable-like. The orcs ain't going to stop the Spikies from killing us as such, but so long as they're around, they're going to be trying to kill the Spikies, which means the Spikies ain't going to be concentrating on us. So... what we need to do is use that distraction and stab a whole bunch of the gits while there's still enough orcs around to keep them busy. Then we can get out of here one way or another and start the plan again once we're somewhere a bit less deadly.
Explain to me again how it is we're going to kill the Spikies,
Gip said.
They're all fast and flippy, and we ain't going to outnumber them like we did that one. Simple,
Snaggy said.
We need more lads. Everyone go and find every grot you can. You all know where they're going to be hiding out. Bully them, bribe them, or if that don't work, tell them the truth. Remember, the more lads you can get with us, the more of them there is to hide behind.
It didn't take long. The grots had stuck with the orcs because what else were they going to do when the wild got moving? Grots liked going fast just as much as orcs did, and they liked watching the big guns blow stuff up just as much as orcs did. Also, although none of them had verbalised it in the same way Snaggy had, all of them knew that if the orcs zogged off, then the Spikies lurking in the shadows that wouldn't have chanced their arm with the main body of the war would certainly creep out to have their way with a bunch of grots. Now, however... the Spikies were everywhere and everyone was trying to kill everyone else and there wasn't even anywhere to run away to. As a result, a quick conversation along the lines of,
come over here, we're getting some lads together,
was an automatic winner since every grot felt safer with a couple of other grots around whom he could shove in front of himself if something dangerous showed up. It wasn't exactly more grots than Snaggy had ever seen before since he'd been around a while or two. But it was certainly more than he'd ever seen in one place and listening to him. They were huddled together in what passed for the middle of the orc lines, although with the way the battle was flowing backwards and forwards, not to mention side to side, that definition was about as solid as a blood axe's promise, so he didn't have the time for lengthy speeches.
Fellow grots,
he bellowed.
It's the day of reckoning. It's the day of finding out what's what. There's a whole bunch of Spiky gits around us what want to scrag us. Are we just going to quake and cower in our boots?
That didn't get the reaction Snaggy was hoping for. There was a general uncertain mumbling, following by one grot in the front row sticking his hand up, hopefully.
Just to check. Is this something we're voting on?
No!
Snaggy yelled.
We ain't voting on nothing.
Well... it's just that it sounded like a question, you see, so we thought...
we ain't voting,
Snaggy shouted.
I ain't asking your opinions. I'm telling you that we ain't just going to quake and cower in our boots. We're going to get out there and show these Spiky gits what think they're better than us why they're wrong about that. You all know how it's done. Trip them up, bring them down, slit their throats.
Another grot stuck his hand up.
What about those of us what ain't got no boots?
Snaggy considered drawing his blaster and just shooting the git, but managed to restrain this very understandable impulse through an almighty effort of will that only went to demonstrate his truly astonishing levels of empathy and understanding towards his fellow grots, even those who were marginally less intelligent than Squig Dribble.
No boots, he said. Simple. Nick them off the Spikies. Slit their throats. Nick their boots. Slit their throats. Nick their boots,
the grot repeated, and those immediately around him nodded excitedly.
Slit their throats. Nick their boots. Slit their throats. Nick their boots. Boss,
Git muttered, leaning close to Snaggy.
Are Spiky boots even going to fit?
Shh, Snaggy hissed.
Not now, Gip. Something special's going on.
The phrase was spreading outwards through the grot crowd, jumping from one bald green head to another like squig lice in a market pen. Grots, that a moment ago were looking more than a little dubious about the merits of engaging in combat against well-armoured, highly agile and thoroughly sadistic killers, were now pumping their little fists in time, drawn in by the chant's seductive wiles. Weapons were raised into the air, fear disappeared from faces, and all of a sudden, what had been a cowering mass of terrified individuals was united in purpose. A burgeoning grotoir, just waiting to be unleashed.
Slit their throats! Nick their boots! Slit their throats! Nick their boots! See, Gip,
Snaggy said with satisfaction.
Three syllables. Works every time. If you say so, boss, but what's a silly ball?
Gip asked. Snaggy ignored him. Instead, judging that what passed for wire energy amongst grots was reaching its peak, he risked making himself into a more obvious target for any watching Spikies and hopped up onto the highest thing nearby, the bucket of a squig catapult that had been abandoned after the loaders had run out of pots of buzzer squigs to hurl at the enemy.
Forward, fellow grots,
he declared, waving his stabber in the general direction of the Spikies, which, to be fair, could have been pretty much any direction, including upwards.
For survival, the glory of the grotoir, and bare footwear for all!
The assembled horde bellowed, a few octaves higher than the cry was normally delivered at, and surged forwards. Snaggy wouldn't like to count them, mainly because counting was something he felt that someone else should do for him, but there were a lot of grots. Most of them were from mobs that had slipped away from the runt herds, but there were also oilers and orderlies of mechs and docks whose bosses weren't important enough for the grots concerned to have derived any clout from their role. Muckers out of squig pens, fetchers, carriers and message runners, even the crews of those mech guns that had run out of ammo. All of them had come together for one purpose under one leader. Him, Snaggy Littletooth.
Oi, Snaggy!
Snaggy looked down and saw to his general contempt the familiar face of Nisquick looking up at him.
What do you want?
He asked, then froze in horror. Had Nisquick been in the crowd just now? Had he heard Snaggy speak? Had Snaggy said anything about overthrowing Uftek or just about scragging Spikies? He was fairly sure it had just been about scragging Spikies, but...
Good speech,
Nisquick said encouragingly.
You really got them fired up. The boss'll be dead pleased. The boss'll just be plain dead when I get my way,
Snaggy thought, with the glee of one who knew that the grot to whom he was speaking was barely capable of forming his own thoughts, let alone perceiving those of a genius and master of deception.
Yeah,
he said out loud.
I was proud of... Don't lean on that! What?
Nisquick asked, looking at his right elbow, but it was too late. The squig catapult's mechanism, designed, if the word could be applied to something put together by a mechaniac working more on instinct and intuition than actual measurements, to be operable by a grot's comparatively weedy arms, was not robust enough to withstand Nisquick's weight. Clunk! Snaggy yelled as the counterweight dropped and the bucket went up with entirely predictable consequences. A good-sized pot of buzzer squigs was not much smaller than a grot, and while it was also a bit lighter, the contraptions that launched them were built for range, since any good mech knew that no grot was going to be reliable once the enemy got too close. Snaggy hurtled through the air, getting a brief, jumbled and not entirely useful overview of the battle from above as he went. He managed to twist around, desperate to see where he was going. A nightmarish visage loomed up in front of him, floating on a skyboard.
Ah!
Snaggy yelled again and stabbed reflexively. Momentum could achieve a lot, including surprise and penetration. Snaggy's stabber struck home and punched deep into the chest of the thing a moment before he collided with it, and the force of the impact knocked both of them clear off the board. The spiky, if that was what it was, for its face was like no spiky Snaggy had ever seen before, was attached to its ride by a chain, which arrested their joint fall a few feet down. The board began to veer. The spiky burbled as blood gouted from its body, and Snaggy desperately clawed at it to try to get some sort of grip with which to hold on. His knife was already slipping free. His groping fingers caught on the edge of something, and he tightened his grasp, but it came away just as his stabber succumbed to his weight and came loose with a sucking sound. He fell, landed with a thump, looked at what was clenched between his fingers, and shrieked. The spiky's face had come off in his hand. Snaggy was not a squeamish sort, but pulling people's faces off was the sort of thing that spikies did. There wasn't any point to it, other than causing pain and suffering beyond what any orc or grot would be interested in inflicting. If someone needed killing, then you shanked them. If you were a grot, preferably when they were looking the other way. You might make an example of some git what had got too big for his boots, but that was generally by duffing him up a bit more than was needed for him to learn his place, just to make sure everyone else got the message. Pulling faces off? Where was the mileage in that? Then Snaggy realised two things. Firstly, the badly bleeding spiky was being borne away by its skyboard, and it was still in possession of its face. In fact, his face looked a lot more face-like than it had a moment ago. The ugly, bulbous, near shapeless and deeply pitted thing in Snaggy's hand, which also stank for some reason, was a mask. Secondly, there were several huge, multi-eyed monsters with entirely unreasonably large claws closing in on him, with demeanours that were rapidly shifting from curious to predatory. If there was one thing that Snaggy had learned to do in this cruelest of galaxies, it was to survive.